Marshall, could you please call the next case while the council is getting settled?
Now calling case number A25-0250, Tanya K. Long and OBO Minor Child, appellant, versus Benny James Potts, respondent.
Good morning, Council. You can take a moment to get settled, or I don't know if
you appreciate it.
So, and just as a quick housekeeping matter on this case, I know that there had been some correspondence about who would be arguing today. Are you the attorney supervising
yes,
attorney
with
the
record,
clinic?
Yes, off the record, I'm Emily Brudzinski. I apologize for any miscommunication or any inconvenience that might have caused. There was a misunderstanding about the requirements for having a certified student attorney appear and make oral arguments, so I do apologize for that. That student is here and she's watching, but she's not able to make those arguments, it sounds like.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification, and we'll move ahead then with your argument this morning. This is a case where we only have counsel for appellant arguing because the respondent didn't file a brief in this matter. So you will have 15 minutes for your argument, and we can go from there. But if you'd like, feel free to take a minute to adjust the podium. There are buttons on the front. And otherwise, when you're ready, you can feel free to go ahead and begin your argument. And please, just for one more time for the record, just identify yourself and then your client.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. I'm Emily Brudzinski, and I am representing appellant Tanya K. Long on behalf of minor grandchild. This particular matter before the court, the first issue at hand is whether or not the court should have been able to deny the appellant's petition based on its merits, based on the petition and its accompanying affidavit and attachments. And then whether or not, if that initial issue or a decision was appropriate, whether or not the Domestic Abuse Act was appropriately applied thereon, and whether or not the court essentially dismissed the matter without a hearing, and whether or not that was something that the court was able to do, should have done under 518B. It's the appellant's position that generally speaking, when an order for protection is submitted to the court, the Domestic Abuse Act provides that if domestic abuse has occurred, that a petitioner can bring on behalf of themselves and any dependents or minor children that they have been victim to or incident to this domestic violence perpetrated by the respondent, and they would bring that by petition, alleging exactly the specific incidences as specifically as possible, dates, times, etc., what happened. There is not case law that's specific as to the forms that the district courts are currently using to determine whether or not an affidavit and petition lacks merit, and there is no specific mention in the statute as to the type of domestic abuse or the frequency of domestic abuse or even the recency of domestic abuse that brings us to the place of achieving merit.
Can I ask a question if you can answer? The form that Ramsey County used here was unfamiliar to me. I've seen other forms that are typically used where it still checked the box, but at least it has language with findings that would track the statute. I don't see that in this form. Do you know, is this a form unique to Ramsey County?
Unfortunately not. That is one of the things that, you know, whether we have to make decisions about what issues to bring to the Court of Appeals, right? And that is something that certainly could have probably made its way into an issue and argument. It's a little bit encompassed in our first argument in that this form specifically does not lay out particular findings that allow the court to simply check a box and be done. I do believe that the court should have established further findings as to how this affidavit and its petition lacked merit. And I will say anecdotally, in my experience, the last two OFPs I've gotten back from other courts have had specific findings, or at least some language as to this petition lacks merit because it fails to allege domestic abuse or something like, something additional, right? And I think in this particular case, the lack of findings makes it so that we kind of have to speculate as to what the district court was thinking when they did dismiss and find that there was a lack of merit. And I think the reality there is that my understanding based on statute and case law is that there's only probably two ways the court can determine that an affidavit or petition lacks merit. And again, this is kind of a case of first impression, and so I don't really, that first issue is a little bit ambiguous, but for the most part, I would say that they can say that the Domestic Abuse Act does not apply, right? There's no allegations of domestic abuse, and so therefore we haven't even reached what we need to apply the statute. And then the other one would be simply that effectively that the domestic abuse that the petitioner thinks that they've brought maybe doesn't fit the statute enough.
So you're not necessarily saying a district court can never reject a petition without a hearing. It's just that given the submissions in this case, the district court abused its discretion in doing so. It is an abuse of discretion standard, right?
Correct. I believe it's an abuse of discretion standard based off of looking at what, specifically looking at what the court has to work with, right, the statute and the case law. And I think specifically based on the statute, we're given a claim, grounds for a claim, hey, who can bring a petition, and then we're given a definition. What is it that this person needs to be claiming to meet statute? And I think specifically in this case, without further findings, the court wasn't able to make a determination that doesn't look totally erroneous that this petitioner did not meet the statute in terms of relationship and personal experience, personal victim.
So it's like a Rule 12 analysis in your mind.
Yes.
But
yes.
When, like, I guess just when, under the statute, which says that the district court shall either order ex parte relief or set a hearing if it denies it, unless no hearing has been requested.
So
then I guess I'm just wondering under the state, like, does the district court have the authority to look at a petition and say this is defective for some reason and not hold a hearing? I understand that there's a box that the court checked and can check on this form, but I'm just wondering what the statutory authority is to deny a petition on the merits without a hearing when one's been requested.
I think that the form in and of itself does set these referees and judges up for failure because effectively it provides a box without saying you need to provide something else, right? So I'm not even really blaming the ref in this particular case. It's effectively like if we're going to use this form, then we do have to look to the statute. The statute specifically says when we're looking at the Domestic Abuse Act, you have to allege the existence of domestic abuse, including specific facts and circumstances from which relief is sought. And presumably, those specific facts and circumstances need to allege the existence of domestic abuse, which is defined as physical bodily injury or assault or the infliction of fear of imminent physical harm, bodily injury or assault, or a couple other additional terroristic threats, criminal sexual conduct, interference with an emergency call. So generally speaking, I'd say those first two umbrellas are pretty large, right? Like, was there an infliction of physical bodily harm, or were you fearful of that? And if someone alleges those things in a petition, I would say that the court cannot make a determination based on merit because it is similar to a prima facie finding or something like that, where it's essentially we're just meeting the threshold, applying the statute, and then we need to hear the merits or a judge credibility at a hearing.
I think in my mind the question goes to, you know, given the plain language of the statute, can the district court ever, you know, reject an OFP petition without a hearing? And one question I have is this. The HRO statute, I think, has specific language that says nothing in this statute shall require a hearing on a matter that has no merit. Or there's some sort of out, like this HRO request has no merit, you can deny it without a hearing. We don't have similar language in the OFP statute. However, we have case law that often says when figuring out what the OFP statute means, we look at the HRO statute and vice versa. So has there ever been a case where we've said, well, relying on So the language in the HRO statute, you know, we recognize there could be a circumstance where, you know, the petition doesn't allege domestic abuse. You know, it says OFP, my ex is a POS, he won't let me use the car. I mean, that obviously has no merit. So do we really think the court has to have a hearing on that, or do we kind of apply that same HRO lens of there has to be some conceivable merit to the claim?
There's several layers to that answer. So bear with
several
me.
Several layers to the dissertation, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Thankfully, I'm relatively familiar with both statutes, so give me a moment. So I will say that you're correct that oftentimes the district court and the appellate court look at both of the OFP and HRO matters as special proceedings, right, or under the same umbrella or box in terms of how we handle these things moving forward. I will say that there is definitely a distinction between both of those statutes, though, too. And there is some cases, even anecdotally, right, where you might apply for an OFP, not get it, and then apply for an HRO and get it. And it's because the statute has different requirements, different relationship requirements, but also different act requirements. And I think based on the definition of what is domestic abuse and what is harassment, there is a lot of overlap. But that is to say that I think when we bring a petition as a petitioner alleging acts of domestic abuse, if we're saying that those acts meet statute, we cannot not have a hearing. If we're saying it doesn't have merit because the statute doesn't even apply here, because we're looking at the definition and this isn't even domestic abuse, I think absolutely those can be cases that can be dismissed on merit. I will say the case law and the statute's not great about explaining that. So
let me ask you a question about that. So here, you know, the statute requires the petition with an affidavit. You know, just in reviewing the record here, I noted that the petition here is signed under oath. It looks like you were the attorney who filed it. Right.
Correct.
So under here, the declaration under penalty of perjury is your signature, not the petitioner's. I guess I'm just wondering, is that an affidavit under the statute that's required? Does it matter if an attorney or does it have to be a personal? I don't know that we don't know what the district court was thinking. I'm just curious for your thoughts on that. And let's just say, for sake of argument, the affidavit's defective because it's not signed under penalty of perjury by the petitioner. Is that a basis for the district court to summarily deny a petition in the way that you were just talking about? Or is this, we don't know what the court did. Is that what they were thinking? I don't know. It's a different question about whether they need to say that on the order. But I guess I'm just curious for if you have thoughts on that off the cuff.
I can only speak anecdotally on that. If that was the case, I'd be shocked. And that's not to say that there's...
If what was the case? That they could deny it on the merits?
That it was denied on a defective affidavit for lack of client signature under oath. I will say specifically related to that is that there is a general practice that these forms, unfortunately, they are designed for pro se parties. A lot of times they are used by counsel just to save time and money, but the reality is that they just aren't customizable or they aren't customized in the way that clients often need them to be. So it is very general practice, and I'll say this as a domestic abuse advocate before I became an attorney, that we append an attachment or something. And I think if we were going to go down in the nitty-gritties of a defective affidavit, I'd probably have clients sign the attachment, mm-hmm. right? And that's not usually practice either, so I think that's a little bit of a reach, but I understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying in your experience that petitions are typically signed under oath by counsel and not when they're represented and not by the actual petitioner?
I believe that it can go both ways. I've had experience with both in that the filing of and having accepted and granted ex parte orders under the first premise with counsel signing or alleging certain facts on behalf of the petitioner. Is that a perfect science? Probably not. And if I had received findings that said, hey, this is a defective affidavit because you signed for your client, I wouldn't have brought the appeal. Mm-hmm. So specifically with the first step, if we're saying hey, I think if the Domestic Abuse Act does apply, if we're saying that there is a bare threshold for you've said that these incidents occurred, we're for purposes of applying the statute, we're believing you, or we're finding the we're making findings in the most favorable light to the petitioner, and we're saying that the act does apply. There's multiple different provisions within the act that require the court to have a hearing, and there's no provisions within the act that allow the court to simply not hold a hearing. The one exception to that would be if the petitioner has specifically requested that there not be a hearing held. There is a provision in there that protects petitioners and says, if we don't see that there's a basis for an ex parte, if we are not going to grant you any protection in the interim, considering some people are living with their respondents, et cetera, then we're not going to let them know, serve them, and hold a hearing. Absent that exception, every other issue calls for a hearing. Specifically, with relation to subdivision 5 is where most of the hearing language is within that act. Under subdivision 5A, upon receipt of the petition, the court shall order a hearing that shall be held no later than 14 days from the date of the order for hearing, unless an ex parte order is issued. In this particular situation, had the court not made that initial finding of no merit, they would have potentially made a finding that there was no basis for an ex parte order, and that's okay, that's discretionary. But even under that case, and especially under that case, if the court does not issue an ex parte order, they need to hold a hearing, and they need to hold a hearing within a certain amount of time. The subdivision 5C says something similar in that if an ex parte order has been issued and the petitioner seeks relief beyond what is specified, what the court can issue or can order without a hearing, as specified in subdivision 7, or if the court declines to order relief requested by the petitioner, a hearing must be held within 7 days. I think that's a little bit confusing in terms of whether the court should have held a hearing within 7 days or within 14 days, but I think the reality is that the court should have held a hearing. Sorry, did I see a hand?
No. Your time's expired. I don't know if you want to just wrap up.
Yeah, fundamentally, I think that the client in this particular case definitely alleged the existence of facts sufficient to constitute domestic abuse, thereby invoking the Domestic Abuse Act or the domestic abuse statute. And in that way, because of that, the court cannot simply not hold a hearing. Because of subdivision 5A, subdivision 5C, and the fact that the client requested specifically a hearing. And so therefore, we're asking for the court to reverse and remand so that the petitioner can have a hearing on the petition that she submitted.
Well, one really just quick question. Are you requesting reconsideration of the ex parte order at this point? Or, because, you know, the... Now the evidence is, you know, not quite as timely as it was when it was originally filed, right? Are you still seeking ex parte, or is your request to remand for a hearing on the OFP?
I think the latter, because I think that the science of your analysis on the emergency relief is probably reasonable. And I think it would just be a matter of if this, I mean, honestly, obviously, we believe that if this issue were to go to a hearing, that the court would find that there was merit to the argument and that a order following hearing would be granted.
Thank you, counsel.
Is respondent in custody?
I'm not sure as of today. He does have several criminal charges pending and has had warrants recently for non-appearance, but I'm not sure about his custodial status today.
Great. Thank you, counsel. The matter has been submitted, and we will issue an opinion in the time prescribed by statute. That concludes our oral calendar today, so we will adjourn.
Please rise.